This episode of Remnant Radio is brought to you in part by our sponsors at Kairos Classrooms. Have you ever thought about learning a biblical language as a supplemental tool in your biblical studies? Well, Kairos Classrooms offers real classroom environments with classmates and a live instructor who can help teach you biblical languages, both Greek and Hebrew. You need to check out Kairos Classrooms today. The price for a single semester is crazy affordable for anyone, so check out the links in the description and use promo code REMNANT to get 10% off Kairos Classrooms. Check out Kairos Classrooms today. Discount code REMNANT, REMNANT, to get 10% off your semester. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the wonderful world of Remnant Radio. In this program, we're talking about psychedelics. It's going to be a trip.
You are watching The Remnant Radio, a crowd-funded show where we interview pastors, teachers, historians, and theologians from different churches and denominations. My name is Joshua Lewis, and this is my co-host, Michael Roundtree. Together, we want to help you break outside of your theological echo chambers. If you're interested in learning about history, theology, or the gifts of the Spirit, this is the show for you.
Today, we're talking about the very popular drugs rising in prominence, rising in the popular eye, in the sciences, in the medical field, pop culture even. If you turn on a Joe Rogan episode, there's a good 50% chance he's going to be talking about ayahuasca or psilocybin mushrooms. That's what we're talking about today. The psychedelic drugs and their use in medical practice. Should Christians ever participate in them for medicinal purposes? All that and more in this episode. But before we dive in, got to remind the viewer, Remnant Radio has got a lot going on. We got conferences. We got courses. We got Patreon content. Like next week, Miller is going to be doing some live Q&A stuff on Patreon. You want to be a part of that? You want to know all the different things we have going on? The discount codes, the promo codes. I forget what we called them earlier today in our staff meeting. The codes that get you the early bird discounts on everything. All of those can be found in the newsletter. So make sure you subscribe to that. You can find it in the link of the description. Also, the link of the description is the website. So check out theremnantradio.com and you can get more of that information. Michael Miller, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. Busy today. Busy this week. Leaving tomorrow morning to head out to San Diego to do a quick meeting and then going out to Long Beach, California, where I'll be teaching on healing deliverance. And this is kind of fun because Roundtree is going to join me Saturday night. He's preaching cool. Sunday morning because I got to be back at my church to preach Sunday morning. So they were like, hey, could we get Roundtree to come preach Sunday? I was like, I don't know. Let's ask.
Super.
So I don't know. It's always fun when I get to hang out with you guys, him or you in person. I get excited. So.
Yeah, it's always fun. I enjoy it. Yeah, I just got back from Laguna Niguel Vineyard like last week. So
yeah.
I left California. You're going to California. That's fun.
Laguna Niguel Vineyard years ago.
Have you?
Yeah. My buddy Dave Hess was that was his sending church when he was out on the.
Dave Hess came from that church.
Yeah. He's still in that area, though.
Conversations are going to emerge, my friend. About ayahuasca.
Let's talk about all the times that we have been tripping on ayahuasca.
Nope, never done it.
Just kidding. We've never done that. Sincerely, never done that.
So we're talking about this because of its rise in, first of all, in pop culture. It's becoming extremely popular to talk about. It's been extremely popular to do, and it's been pushed in the medical field and the sciences right now. So it's kind of rising to the surface as it relates to Christians. When things like this begin to emerge, we need to discuss the Christian ethics surrounding these things. So what we want to do in this program is kind of walk through what ayahuasca is. If people who aren't familiar with it, we want to kind of talk about its effects, how it's consumed, its effects on the mind, where it originates. We're talking about what the Bible says about psychedelics. We'll be talking about, you know, some drunkenness, some sober-minded verses. We're going to be talking about sorcery in the Bible, what that looks like. And then we're going to talk about kind of recreational purposes, spiritual purposes, and then medical purposes. We're going to kind of walk all through that today in this program. So you guys stay tuned for all of that fun stuff. Miller, where do you want to start, my friend?
Oh, gosh. I mean, obviously, I think we should start with what it is in particular. Its origin, its composition, its legal status. And then get into how it's used. And I think this is also important. We're not just talking about ayahuasca. We're talking about microdosing shrooms or ketamine, or we're kind of lumping this all together in the realm of psychedelics. Am I right on that, Josh? Even though the modality is different, it's all similar in a sense of what it's being used for, both recreationally and medicinally, right?
Correct. Yes. In fact, for those who are watching who want more extra content on the Patreon space, my friend Adam, I think, how do I pronounce his here? This is a clip from Adam here, just talking about the positive and negative effects of psilocybin. He is a neuroscientist. He's got a startup company that talks about, like, they scan the human brain. They're looking for what the brain looks like before it has any drugs introduced into it, then a scan when there are drugs introduced into it, and then kind of what happens afterward. This whole process allows AI to kind of scan brain waves, since all of our chemicals in our brains, our brain composition is different person to person. The way that medication works on one individual to cure bipolar might make another one horribly depressed, and trying to allow AI to scan all of this creates a system that is safer. So I filmed an entire interview with my buddy Adam. He's come to my church a couple of times, happened to be having dinner with me this week, and asked, you know, hey man, have you ever heard of ayahuasca? And I was like, yeah, what do you know? And he's like, that's part of the field of my study. So we chatted quite a bit about ayahuasca. We talked about psilocybin, mushrooms, those kinds of things. And we talked about that on a full Patreon video that will be released probably at the latest tomorrow there on Patreon for people who want to do a deep dive into the science side of it.
Yeah, we're going to use some of those clips though here in this episode. But let's first, I guess, define what it is, ayahuasca and then others. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We'll dive into it. So origin, ayahuasca is traditionally spiritual medicine used among indigenous peoples of the Amazon basin. It's been used for centuries for healing and for religious ceremonies. And so when we say religious ceremonies, we're not just talking about something purely religiously ritualistic. We're talking about a religious ceremony where you have experiences. So its composition is that it's made up, I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this rightly, but from the Banisteriopsis caapi vine. Is that, did I say that right, Josh?
Close enough.
Banisteriopsis caapi vine, and usually contains leaves from plants that are sources for psychoactive compound DMT, typically psychotropic verdes. I can't say these things, man.
It's okay. Well, I'm so glad that you're taking a stab at it rather than me. You know how great it is to listen to dyslexic guy try to read multi-syllable words. The composition of this is, again, it's kind of like a tea blend. Kind of looks like mud when you drink it. DMT is the actual compound that's affecting the brain. However, DMT typically gets dissolved in the liver. So there has to be some kind of blocker that is put into the DMT mixture. And that's why this ayahuasca has that kind of native blocker in it that allows the body to go through a trip. In fact, your body right now contains DMT in it naturally, from what I understand. And that the reason we're not tripping right now is because there's some kind of blocker, because that DMT is getting digested.
Filtered out.
That's right.
But this removes that filter. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes.
These substances, they remove the filter that causes the DMT to impact the brain in such a way that you have this experience.
That's right. So you take this block, again, the mixture of ayahuasca contains both DMT and this blocker that allows you to go on a trip, because that blocker allows your liver to not process that, and your brain gets the full effect of that drug. As far as legal status, the brew is legal in some South American countries within a ceremonial and religious context, but is generally illegal in many countries, including the United States. However, there are quite a few groups that are claiming for religious purposes. They're using this drug. So there are places even in the States for religious purposes. They consider it a sacrament in California, so they're able to administer it in certain contexts.
Wow. I didn't know that. I know here in Colorado, we have legalized legalized shrooms, not just microdosing. You can do it full on.
Yeah.
And then I know that the ketamine treatment is probably similar in a sense. Although it may not be DMT, it might be something else. I don't know enough about it.
Well, the thing about it is the psilocybin, from what I understand, the reason that people are really interested in ayahuasca opposed to psilocybin is it seems to be for most, and this is different, everyone's brain chemistry is different. The psilocybin seems to be a little bit more jarring, whereas the ayahuasca can be more of a gentler trip. Additionally, the psilocybin can last like 6 hours. And that's nuts. Whereas your ayahuasca trips are typically 2 hours-ish. So, okay. Consumed and prepared. Vine leaves are boiled together for many hours to extract the active compounds, resulting in a thick brown liquid. Ceremonial drinking consumption usually takes place in some kind of ceremonial setting led by an experienced shaman or facilitator who guides the participants through these experiences. Now, the set and setting, it's important for various religious groups to fast before they do this, to kind of have their mind and heart right, to eat a certain way before they go on this trip. It's usually when done by a shaman, is done in a kind of like religious ceremony. They're whacking you with sticks. They're blowing smoke in your face. They're having you sit in round groups. You could jump on YouTube and type in Joe Rogan DMT or Joe Rogan ayahuasca and just find 30 to 50 videos that are 8 minutes long and watch them back to back. And everyone's story is a little bit different because they're using this compound and they're introducing it as a spiritual experience by the shaman. Because for the most part, in the States, it's not legal. So you have to go to South America to use it. And if you're going to rainforest, going to South America, then you're getting a shaman. You're getting some kind of voodoo witch doctor who's leading you through this process. So that's typically the way that it works. And as it relates to all these other countries, it is almost indefinitely used in kind of religious practices and ceremonies.
Well, and there's a number of risks that are involved with it. The risk usually involve nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, increased heart rate. However, we don't have this necessarily in a formal set of risk. I imagine these are the risks that happen when you're doing it in a doctor's office to deal with PTSD. However, I think there are other risks that aren't mentioned here that the doctors may not know about. And some of those risks that I would put in there are demonization, because I've had to kick demons out of people because the Bible calls this sorcery. Another thing I would say is that you see this in Joe Rogan. He talks about a guy who took a trip and he was gone for not just like a few hours, but like 3 days. Like he was on this trip for a long period of time. And so maybe there's ways to mitigate that. And I think there is ways to mitigate that in a doctor's office when it's being done as a controlled experiment or to treat PTSD. However, I don't think that's the case when people are going to places like Costa Rica and going, you know, having a shaman lead them through these experiences. So is that fair to say, Josh?
I mean, up front, I think what we want to try to do is what we want to try to do is we want to discuss like what it is, how it works, what does the Bible say typically about psychotropic drugs, psychedelic drugs, and then how should we process through the ethics of it all? And there are different ways that Christians are parsing it. You can kind of see Miller doing that just there, where he's like, could it be appropriate in medical conditions? We can talk about that in a second. The question about really, is it appropriate? I think on the front end, we can say it's not appropriate for recreational or spiritual use for Christians, full stop. The question on is it appropriate medically, I think can be up in the air for some Christians. We'll weigh in, we'll give our own opinion. I don't want to speak for all of Christendom. However, I do think it's important that we kind of know the science of all this. Again, full interview with a neuroscientist can be found on Patreon, but I think this would probably be a good place to kind of watch the positive. I got one video on the positives, one video on the negatives, and I'll kind of walk through some of this with you. Let's watch this video with Adam just here for a moment on the kind of positive effects that people are having on a kind of sociological level, a psychological level with the use of ayahuasca and psilocybin and things such as this.
Yeah, it's an evolving picture because you are starting to get an accumulation of evidence that these succeed a little bit better than you're in a trial than your average antidepressant. So typically what we're seeing with antidepressants is that they work for about 2/3 of people. So that leaves a significant portion who are not helped. And then they go and try another one and maybe that one works, but it's still kind of a coin flip. So you keep trying. Here you're getting kind of closer to like 75% that it works for. And that's still preliminary. There haven't been a whole lot of studies to be able to build a real accumulation of evidence towards this, but so far, it seems like they may be more effective and for more people. And a big component is you don't have to take them every day. You can have these sessions that last 3 months to even up to a year before needing another session. For when you're talking about really severe issues like PTSD, and there's a lot of talk with the veteran within their veterans where you have those kinds of really severe PTSD and these guys are looking for something or women are looking for something that where they failed with everything else and they're desperate. This sometimes works where the other stuff has failed. And I've seen some like videos of this where it's been amazing. showing a breakthrough for, you know, a veteran who came into this, came to this group desperate, and he was on nearly suicidal, and it really turned him around, and it holds for like 3 months. And there are few things that can really reverse such a dramatic scenario where you have that suicidal severity. So it's the severity that it can treat. It's what's looking like a higher efficacy rate, and it's how practical it could be with regards to dosing that has a lot of people excited. Now, that there is an issue with, they're trying to make new formulations of the drug company so that it's not like a psilocybin lasts 6 to 8 hours. You want shorter than that. Otherwise, it's for accessibility. You can't pay, you know, for the clinical, for a therapist to be in the room with you that long. It's going to be into the thousands. So there are a good many practical elements of this that are going to need to be ironed out.
For those of you guys who are watching and want to find more about that research, Sama Therapeutics, you can see it. If you're listening to the audio, it's Sama Therapeutics, S-A-M-A Therapeutics. You can go find more about their stuff online. You can go Google them. And if you're looking to support, fund things like that, that is something that they are looking for and interested in, because the human brain is a very complex thing in the way that the brain gives off, again, certain brain waves, and being able to scan those and treat, you know, the human mind in very intentional and specific ways, something that they're working on there. So I would encourage you, reach out if that's something that interests you. But this concept of it being helpful, there are, me and Adam talk quite a bit about veterans, when we talk about children that were in trafficking, talk about, you know, individuals who are on drugs, hardcore drugs. If you're like a meth addict, something about this drug, when you take it, inhibits your ability to determine where you begin and where you end. And you kind of view yourself in light of everything. Everything's interconnected, and you're kind of outside of yourself. So when you're taking one of these psychedelic drugs, the idea for a drug addict, they can't see past themselves, their own desires, their own wants, their own needs. Everything is expendable to get what they want. And it's all about them. And they're viewing their whole life through this substance abuse. And whenever they take this psychedelic drug, it gives them this kind of out of body experience where they realize that they're actually connected to everything, and that their decisions and choices actually matter. And there again has been a wildly successful rate of helping these people who have hardcore addictions. On the backside of this, you have a similar experience with PTSD individuals who, let's say, again, hypothetically, a guy's in Nam, you know, sees his buddy get blown up with a grenade. He holds himself responsible for that, you know, his entire life, and is able to take this drug, and by way of kind of almost like a guided meditation, a guided therapeutic practice where they're taking this drug. Well, I want you to go back to that spot. And they're kind of tripping, and their imagination's going wild. And through this guided therapy, are able to go back to that moment and relive it without the shame, without the aggression, and have that therapist kind of help them with the neuroplasticity. Something happens in the brain when you take these drugs that allows your brain to reprocess and to recatalog certain events, again, without those shame kind of inhibitors that are present. So if we're looking at those kinds of therapeutic uses, like, again, children who've got traumatic experiences, PTSD victims, and addicts, that seems to be what this is actually for, if you're going to categorize it under a medical practice. And if we're just going to be honest with the data, it seems as if it's helping. When the studies have been done, research has been done, I am not by any means saying that it is good, right? There are 1,000 people who say yoga helped me get better, get physical. And I'm just saying, just because it works doesn't mean it's good. That's a separate question. It's a different ethics question that's coming later in the program.
Pragmatism, right?
That's right. Go ahead.
So just say ends don't justify the means. So the question is whether the means are biblical or not, not whether the ends are good or not. So the Bible has a lot to say about drugs, alcohol, all of those things. So you've got a number of prohibitions in particular about the abuse of alcohol. Proverbs 20 verse 1, it says, "Wine is a mocker, strong drink a brawler, and whoever is led astray by it is not wise." You've got Proverbs 23 verse 20 through 21, "Do not be among drunkards or among the gluttonous eaters of meat, for the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and slumber will clothe them with rags." Isaiah 5:11, "Woe to those who rise early in the morning, that they may run after strong drink, who tarry late into the evening, as wine inflames them." And then the New Testament, Romans 13:13, let us walk properly as in the daytime, not in orgies and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and sensuality, not in quarreling or jealousy. So you're putting drunkenness up there with all of these other things. 1 Corinthians 6:10, neither thieves, nor the greedy, nor the drunkards, nor revilers, nor swindlers will inherit the kingdom of God. And we've got a number more verses about that.
So forth and so on. Yeah, I can take right. those on sober-mindedness if you'd like.
Yeah, go for it.
On the opposite side, some would maybe say, well, you're making a correlation between alcohol and this drug. They're very different. You have to drink to get drunk. This is not that. It's an entirely different substance. However, I think the Bible is pretty clear on sober-mindedness. 1 Peter 1:13, therefore prepare your minds for action, being sober-minded, setting your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. 1 Peter 5:8, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. 5:6. So then, let us not sleep as others do, but let us keep awake and be sober. 5:8. But since we belong to the day, let us be sober, having put on the breastplate of faith, love, and the helmet of the hope of our salvation, so forth and so on. Got another one in Timothy, 2 Timothy 4:5. But again, that we're kind of encapsulating drunkenness, not good. Sober-mindedness, good. So if I no longer if I'm using alcohol as a means to escape, it's just not good. It's bad. It's bad for you. And the same is true of being sober-minded. Not only are we not to be out of our minds, but we are to be in our right minds, and we're to be sobered with our minds. And again, if you're using a drug to escape, I think that is really what these verses are pointing us at. There are going to be individuals who take, opioid-based drugs because of pain medication. And they might come to me and say, my doctor has prescribed me two options. I can, one, take this hardcore opioid, right, that is extremely addictive, and I can't operate heavy machinery, and I might not be super sober-minded, but it's because I'm in immense pain. Or I have an option of taking like a THC gummy, right? Now, you'll hear me say, weed for recreational purposes, not good, right? For spiritual purposes, not good. Does it actually have a, psychedelic kind of effect on the human mind, causing people to like snap and go psychotic? Yeah, there are genetic predispositions that people have to that. I would encourage people not to do it. However, to the same token, if you have the option of taking a hardcore opioid that is extremely addictive versus like a THC gummy, I might say get to chewing. You know, like it's just one of those things where we've got people in our lives that are looking for medication for medicinal purposes that, yes, that's not quite the sober-mindedness I don't think the scriptures are talking about here for people who are in pain that are looking for medical treatment and care. That is maybe a different subject matter. Miller, do you want to talk about sorcery and all that fun stuff?
Yeah, it's I'm going to let some of my bias on a lot of this stuff show, just for the record. I'm trying to do the best I can to give it an honest evaluation. I cast demons out of people for doing these kind of things, whether they meant to do it for, medicinal purposes or recreational. I've just seen a lot of this kind of stuff. So I tend to lean on the side of it's probably off limits. But again, let's get back to the scriptures. Let's just try to give this a full evaluation. Forgive me for my bias already showing. But so the scripture uses the word sorcery, and see it in Deuteronomy 18, Leviticus 19, Leviticus 20. It mentions, can you hear that?
Outside I can.
Oh, okay, good. The huge ambulance going by. The word that's being used, sorcery, is the word pharmakia. We get the modern day use of the word pharmacy from that, or pharmaceuticals. So it's defined as the use of magic, often involving drugs and the casting of spells upon people, or the use of drugs is sorcery, the preparing or using of medicine, and then the using of any kind of drugs, potions, or spells. Last definition, the use of medicine, drugs, or spells. So when we think of...
For people who are watching, these are all definitions from theological journals, from kind of word studies that we have from
Blue Letter Bible,
Press, Blue Letter Bible, United Bible Society in New York. Like all of these are like historic theological journal like definitions of these words. So we didn't just make that up. Yeah.
Yeah, the biblical use of these words is not necessarily what we think of. Most of us grew up watching various films like The Wizard of Oz, or I'm trying to think of other things that I watched as a kid. Care Bears. You see, sorcery done in Care Bear movies. Or you think of like the gummy bears. They would drink that magic potion and cause them to bounce. And And then you have like witches who are good and bad in various movies. We don't want to get our definitions for the Bible from media. So when we look at the scriptures, it's not this thing of witches doing riding brooms or, you know, cauldrons full of poison, or just incantations and spells. Although I do think that stuff is out there, like not necessarily the riding brooms, but the fact that people do incantations and spells. When the first century Christians heard of sorcery or witchcraft, here's what they thought of. They thought of the oracles of Delphi getting high and then speaking for their gods. They thought of the Dionysian rites and psychedelic wines similar to LSD. They thought of the mandrake root. And mandrake is a plant that's known for psychoactive properties, including hallucination. It's mentioned in historical texts for its use as an anesthetic and a soporific. In folklore and magical texts, mandrake was often associated with supernatural practices due to its human-like root shape, which actually is kind of, it's creepy-looking root if you ever see it. So that's more of what they were thinking of when they were using the word sorcery or witchcraft. You're talking about using a substance of the earth that allows you to have a spiritual experience or manipulate the world around you through potion or incantation.
Yeah.
Is that about right?
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, we're talking about the ancient sense when the Bible's talking about sorcery, it is often talking about individuals who are trying to speak to the spirit world, to speak to other beings. And again, if you were to do a search right now on Joe Rogan ayahuasca or Joe Rogan DMT in your YouTube, just prepare yourself for profanity. But then also, as you watch these videos, just realize that there is a uniform experience that begins to emerge. They start talking about the gray mechanical elves. If you've ever seen Doctor Strange and there's like a bunch of geometric shapes, it's what an ayahuasca trip is kind of like. They see colors become vivid, shapes begin to fragment to where they're kind of like kaleidoscopic almost, and it's kind of pictograph, and then people kind of like fly out of their skin, if you will, and they kind of end up in space. And while they're in space, there are these gray mechanical beings that talk to them. Where these beings are saying, hey, you know, what are you doing here? Or hey, how'd you get here? Joe Rogan tells an experience where he's up in heaven. I call it heaven, up in the space with these gray angels, and they're pointing at him and laughing at him. And he feels really embarrassed. He's ashamed and he's really frightened. Doesn't like being laughed at. And then he realizes, oh, wait, like what they think doesn't matter. And then he looked over at the metal, you know, elf creatures, and they're like, yeah, you got it. You learned the lesson. Like, so there's this uniform experience of people going into space, meeting these metal beings, these metal elves, and these metal elves teaching them lessons, instructing them, coaching them through life, helping them in their kind of spiritual journey. And if you're a Christian and you hear that story, your worldview says, demons, 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 right? Danger, Will Rogers.
Well, I think
danger.
I think there's a tendency within Christendom to just dismiss it because we're so de-supernaturalized here in the West that we tend to just dismiss it as the neurochemical imbalance, right? You're just tripping. Right? You're seeing stuff that's not real. But I don't think that's a biblical worldview. I think biblically speaking, it's treating these substances as gates, as access points to the supernatural world. And the reason why I think it was forbidden is because it crossed the realms. I think it defied the divine order of things. And so, like when I think of the food laws in Israel, a lot of the times certain animals were forbidden, not because they themselves were unhealthy or bad for you to eat, so although some of them obviously are, but because on some level these animals cross realms, like the things that were forbidden, like lobster or shellfish, are they land animals or are they sea animals? Well, they kind of cross the borders. Pigs and vultures and things like that. Well, they eat the dead. They'll eat anything, and so they're crossing the realm. A lot of the practices, like the tattooing, was an occult of the dead ritual. You're crossing the realm. You're dedicating yourself to the dead. And so Israel and its food laws was to live out divine order. Like that sort of served as a symbol for divine order in life in general. And so here with, when it comes to sorcery, having spiritual experiences, using things like divination, like a Ouija board or other things like that, it was forbidden because you're crossing realms. You're not abiding by the divine order of things. Is that
well? Then it's also important, I think, for our audience to understand that that dreams, dream space, Dr. Heiser talks about this quite a bit. That was communing with the heavens, communing with the spirits. Like, the dreams were where the gods would speak to you. And
there are ordained means, and then there are forbidden means. I think that's the important thing I want to mention, is you can't help yourself for dreaming. You can help yourself from taking ayahuasca to have a spiritual experience.
Well, that's right. That's what I was getting to. If dreams were the gods communicating with you, then how do you communicate with the gods, right? So it's one thing if God speaks to Pharaoh, right, through a dream. That's great. But it's another thing if Pharaoh is trying to go speak to the gods by an undesignated means. And that's what this word sorcery is being used for, is that people are trying to commune with the gods, to commune with God, depending on what their theistic worldview is, often plural, right? Trying to communicate to this god by a means that is unauthorized. And that's what this would be. Even in the kind of stories I'm telling you, like Joe Rogan did this, or this atheist guy, you know, he had on the show, or some famous actress, you know, oh yeah, they had this crazy trip. All of them are religious experiences. Every single one of them. There's not a single one of them that's just medical, that is just a you know, a doctor administering something to someone, you know, who is in pain that needs help. All of these are going to a shaman, going to a guru. Again, it would be 100% forbidden for a Christian to do that, to go to South America and, you know, to get smacked in the face with leaves from the blood of somebody's ancestors and have smoke getting blown into your face. And then, like, you know, take this trip being guided by some witch, you know, to get to the heavens and back again. It would be 100% forbidden for a Christian to do that. That's absurd.
Again, think of the Tower of Babel. Like, what they were doing was they were building an ancient ziggurat, right? It's this thing that brings a portal to access the gods, right? It's this high place that sort of crosses between heaven and earth. And so that's exactly what is being done with sorcery, that's being done with divination. It's like all of those practices that are mentioned of the Canaanites that are forbidden by Moses in Deuteronomy 18, that this is one of those practices. So that's kind of, I'm just trying to sum it up in a biblical understanding of how this stuff is being used in the ancient world and why it was forbidden.
That's right. And there are negative reactions. We're going to watch this negative video as well. We're sitting here talking about the biblical, hey, could you get demonized? Hey, this sounds like a demonic spiritual experience, those kinds of things. That's an important concept there. But then also realizing that there are potential medical ways that there are dangers to this, right? I'm going to let Adam speak into this a little bit, but this clip does not include the case study. I think it was in the 70s, the Chapel Experiment, where a bunch of Bible school students, seminary students, were taking, I believe it was LSD, not LSD, they were taking psilocybin, I believe. One of them ran out claiming that he was Jesus. Now that, I don't know that that was a permanent effect, and if it wasn't just a kind of a 2-hour trip and then he came back to being, you know, Mark or whatever his name was. But apparently he thought he was Christ, a negative effect. Also, if you Google these, this is anecdotal at best, but if you Google Rogan DMT, Rogan ayahuasca, you're going to find a ton of videos of individuals getting in groups of 10. And one of those 10 individuals end up manifesting and like screaming and losing it. Like these atheists are describing the event as someone becoming demon possessed. That's how they're describing it. That they're going back to this childhood trauma and they're screaming and they're trying to strike people and they're fighting violently. And they say they had to tie this person down and pull them outside. Basically, in every story that I've heard of people doing these trips together in a group, someone begins to exhibit these kind of like violent-like tendencies. Now, I asked Adam about this, and he says that's not super common in his experience or in the clinical literature, but it is frequent on the YouTubes in these kinds of huts and, you know, shaman guided experiences. But here are some negative effects as it relates to science. Downsides.
Downsides. You are awake and conscious during this. You, however, are pretty out of it. There have been issues with misconduct from therapists. So the practice of this needs to be regulated well. If they can get to substance where it's not fully psychedelic, that you need someone in the room with you to kind of guide you through the experience and have that therapeutic kind of expertise, that would be ideal. But we're not sure if that kind of full psychedelic experience is required for the therapeutic benefits. It's just in my opinion, you're probably going to need that full experience for some cases, perhaps with like severe trauma to help you kind of go back in your memory in a way where you can re-experience it without the re-experiencing in such an adverse way. Maybe look at it in a more objective sense, like what psilocybin is. That's a primary benefit of what people are seeing with psilocybin, is to be able to go back and re-experience without the kind of the visceral aversion response, without as much of the shame that you can have when you're even as a victim of going back into some experiences where you've been traumatized. It's the way it helps you to re-experience things in a way that changes your perspective on it, can see different perspectives and find a healthier view, is a big benefit.
Yeah. And one of the things that Adam and I spoke about was the effect of being under the influence of this. You're very open to suggestions. So you can be in a situation where you've got a therapist who's taking advantage of an individual because they're kind of in this pseudo awake sleep. It can be very similar to a date. I don't want to say that word on YouTube or and get deplatformed, but I think you can fill in the blanks there. Cause someone to be not super in control of their faculties and take advantage of them. That this has been used in that way in certain situations. And again, I would really encourage people not to do this because it's super dangerous. And the question really comes down to, I think for us, not for recreational purposes, not for spiritual purposes. We've already talked biblically. That is absolutely 100% forbidden. The question really gets down to that medical practice. Would it ever be acceptable in a medical condition? Now, Adam spoke about this drug being synthesized, the specific chemical that would cause a neuroplasticity, while then like isolating that and then removing the kind of compounds that would cause the trip. That is something that science is really working on right now, of trying to get people to have a drug that would help them heal and move on from their kind of traumatic experiences without the psychedelic experience attached to it. So that would be, I think, permissible.
Let me just give by an analogy. If you imagine like you have a muscle that you build and you work out this one bicep, well, you're going to have this like really strong thing that can carry a lot. And same thing is true with our brain tissue. It's neuroplastic, right? So it can create it's almost like a muscle in the sense that it becomes that thought or that way of thinking is so strengthened and so big that it creates just a huge flood of emotion. So for people who are struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder, they've got this part of their brain that's sort of built up and or injured. And they're trying to remove the psychedelic effect of the drug while allowing the drug to do what it does when it comes to neuroplasticity and allow you to let that part of the brain atrophy and a new part of the brain that is not responding in trauma to get activated. Is that kind of what you're saying, Josh?
That's right. That's 100% okay. Right. So that would really, the question on the Christian's mind is the trip. That's really what's weighing on us. Is there a way?
Some people will say it's motive. And I just think that we put way too much stock here in the West on motivation. It's like with yoga, people say, well, I'm doing Christian yoga. I'm worshiping Jesus. Well, that doesn't make it any less yoga. It's a forbidden practice. It's idolatry. You can't take the idolatry out of the yoga. Same thing with it's like when people say the word Christian yoga, I'm like, well, parallel that. I do Christian voodoo. I do Christian witchcraft. Does that somehow make it
Christian pornography,
less?
Christian meth, like, yeah. Saying Christian in front of meth doesn't make meth okay. No, I hear you on that.
And the motivation of, well, I'm trying to worship God when I do this. I'm going, it doesn't change the fact that you're still worshiping your God the way the pagans worship their gods. And it's
right.
Practice that was passed down by those pagan gods.
So we would say in ignorance, that would still be worship. But let's kind of take this, let's keep going with this thought. Let's say someone makes this motion. And they make this motion, right? The yogas do not have a patent on those motions, right? God created the body. the body can move. So if you're out there stretching and one of your stretches looks similar to a yoga stretch, that doesn't make it yoga. Yoga is a dance that is retelling the story of a false god beheading another false god. And you're participating in worship of this one god's victory over another god. That's what yoga is. But there's nothing about the body making certain shapes or stretching in certain ways that is inherently demonic. The enemy does not have a patent over stretching. It doesn't work that way. In the same way, chiropractics is not inherently demonic. However, it started that way. It started with a guy hearing a voice, pop this dude's neck, his headache will go away, and certainly it did. But the idea that the human body has a skeletal structure and things can be moved around in such a way to remove the magic from it, the same can be said of astrology and astronomy, right? Like we pulled all the magic out of it and said, okay, here we go. So to Miller's point, there are certain things that are inherently sinful in their practice, right? Again, pornography, meth, those kinds of things. Like you can't Christianize something that is objectively evil. And there are Christians in the Christian ethic that will say objectively, any kind of use of ayahuasca, any kind of use of psilocybin, they're objectively evil and sinful. They cannot be redeemed. I think the question, though, goes beyond motive if you're trying to find a neutral space, because again, some Christians will say it's objectively good. Others will say it's neutral. It's like a spoon. Spoon can make you fat. A spoon can feed the hungry. Like, but it's not the spoon's fault. It's just neutral and how it's used. So I think, though, this is an interesting area. If I go in ancient history, everyone that ingested this chemical, the DMT, they're trying to trip intentionally to communicate with gods. That is not just the intent, but that is what they're doing. They're doing it in a religious ceremony with voodoo doctors. They're doing it with, you know, shamans. They're doing it with a group of people. They have a ritual. They fast before they do it. It is an inherently spiritual experience. The question is the ingestion of a specific food, is that inherently sinful? And that's the question that I think needs to be pushed more. Can we get into a space where you're microdosing to the point where you're not tripping? I think I want to be very, very clear. No matter where you land on this issue, I think Christians should be extremely careful about this issue. I think you should walk with great fear and trembling with this issue, because I do think the stories that are being told about people traveling to heaven, talking to what I would understand to be spirits, I think it's deeply demonic and extremely concerning. At the same token, realizing that there are people who have been horribly abused who are looking for relief, that I go, can this be used in a neutral way to help these people? I think that the Christian ethics needs to continue to investigate into this space to see if that's something. See if we can take the psychotropic side of it out of it. If we could just be something that encourages neuroplasticity.
The trip. Woo. Well, at that point, when you're removing the trip, you're dealing with a different substance, right? It's no longer the same substance. Like I think of non-alcoholic beer. Like it has so little alcohol, it's never going to cause you to be drunk. And we do this. We have, so like with alcohol is an interesting one, because we know that alcohol is not inherently evil. However, when you drink alcohol to the point where you're drunk, or when alcohol becomes a substance you've abused for so long, you no longer get drunk from it, but you do drink it every day. You've got a problem, a massive problem. And I'd say this is sin. But alcohol is one of those substances where you can drink a bit of it and not get drunk, and it's totally permissible. But can you do that with these kind of substances? Like you can't really smoke weed without getting high. You can't really take acid without going on a trip. But when you remove the trip component of it, is it the same substance and then therefore permissible because it allows the brain to heal?
Let me ask I don't want to say devil's advocate on this term because it feels especially like I am the devil's advocate. If we're trying to push, I want people to listen. What we're doing is we're practicing a thought experiment. Okay. I'm not defending ayahuasca. Again, I'm voiced for a second.
Both of us. Just
rather dangerous and scary.
For the record, neither of us have done these things, nor will we do these things.
Never
right
will.
Now, our stance is it's forbidden, 100%. Regardless if we think it's helpful or not. That's our current leaning. However, we are toying around with the conversation ethically.
Yes, we're playing with Christian ethics and trying to push the boundaries and trying to figure out where is the objective line, right? That's what we're doing. So you mentioned a moment ago, Miller, can I drink and not get drunk? but can I smoke and not get high, right? Like those are comparative questions. But if we're saying for medicinal purposes, there are people who take opioids in our churches, right, who are not allowed to operate heavy machinery. They are objectively high. They're objectively not sober.
It happens to be legal. It's legal to be sober-minded.
Doesn't make it any more moral. But the same would
it's
be said of a
drunk.
THC gummy. Right. The same would be said of THC gummy, right? Where, you know, someone has migraines, someone has horrible pain, and this is a way to medicate that pain. And there may be a period of time where, yes, they're high. Yes. But are you and I saying that that getting high for recreational purposes is the same as a person who's taking medication and might be less than sober-minded, right? Like I have a gray space in the area of Christian ethics where I think it's acceptable for a Christian under the purposes of medication and medical treatment to be in a less than sober-minded state, not for escapism, right? But for treatment, I go, that makes sense. And if you're talking about a drug that you take once every 3 months to a year, that is going to give a therapeutic experience, a therapeutic, you know, that's going to heal something, is that acceptable in the same way that taking a THC gummy might be acceptable? You hear what I'm saying?
No, I hear what you're saying.
I hope everyone hears me. We've never done THC, never done ayahuasca, never will.
Right.
How do I have
you
to
and
reiterate
I have seen
that
some
over
pretty serious
over?
Miracles in the past. We had a lady at one of our conferences who, I can't remember the condition, but it's like the pain, it's like the suicide condition. What was it called? Where your face,
transgenital
every nerve is just firing. Transgenital neuralgia. Now, if there was a drug that person could take that might cause them to be high, can't lift machinery, or can't use, you know, machinery. I can't remember the expression. would we say that that's off limits if it means that they can actually live life without feeling constantly in misery, unable to have a life at all because they're just in bed in pain the whole time? Do we say, well, that's okay? Does it suddenly become permissible in those kind of situations? And I'm hard pressed to say absolutely no in those kind of situations. Fortunately, I'm not in one of those kind of situations, so I haven't had to ask that question for myself. I did live with chronic migraines. It was an intense pain, but I found ways to manage it. I would take Advil. I would take caffeine. Caffeine seemed to help. And I would exercise. Exercise would knock out the headache, the migraine. And then the Lord healed me so that I don't have to do any of those things. I still exercise, though. You know, it's hard for people to even toy around with these questions because they're not the ones facing these kind of issues. Somebody who's got post-traumatic stress disorder, is it permissible to help them so that they're not suicidal and not, you know, dipping into the bottle or drugs to escape the constant trauma that they feel is then suddenly microdosing ketamine or microdosing, what is it? Ayahuasca, suddenly become a permissible thing to get them free. I struggle with it personally. I do, just because I don't know how to take the sorcery out of the sorcery. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and that's the question. In the same way, and these are the questions we have to ask. In the same way that, you know, moving your body from point A to point B, stretching, like, isn't objectively evil. Is there something objectively evil about the substance? I'm going to walk through this. These are the three lines of reasoning. I think, if anything, I lean on the latter two, but the first one is it's objectively good. Okay. Motivated by compassion, Christian might appeal to the success rates among addicts, PTSD victims, you know, victims of SA. And they'll say things like drugs can't be inherently demonic because being free, healed and whole isn't inherently evil. Satan only comes to kill, steal, and destroy. These things are binding people up, making them good, making them well. Jesus said a house divided against itself can't stand. And even this ayahuasca is called the atheist cure. People are taking this as an atheist, coming back saying, oh, I'm a theist now. There's some kind of God. I would just caution people who have that kind of reasoning. Again, I'm doing devil's advocate here for it's objectively good. There are Mormons out there who are feeding the homeless, helping drug addicts get off of drugs. You could take that line of reasoning and say, well, you know, a house divided against itself won't stand. It'll stand for a little bit until it falls, right? So like Mormons are, yes, they are helping addicts. Yes, they are getting people off of, you know, addictions to alcoholism. They might be helping victims of PTSD and SA, but it's still a false religion, worshiping a false God, preaching a false gospel that will eternally damn people. So it would make perfect sense to look like you're having this therapeutic effect in the world only to damn people's souls eternally. So I think we need to be careful and stretching Matthew 12, 28 through 22 further than it was intended to go. And then also when it comes to the atheist cure concept, the discussion of I can't tell where I begin and where I end, and I'm one with everything, feels way more akin to Brahman. It's way more akin to Nirvana, way more akin to Kundalini yoga than, and everything is God, rather than there is one divine creator God. I think that we stretch this beyond the testimony of those who have experienced these things when we start to say it's curing atheism. Just because someone's moved one worldview to another worldview doesn't make it right. In fact, both worldviews are inherently sinful and wrong. So I think we have to take that into account. You want to keep going through these, Miller? Do you want to weigh in on any of this?
No, I mean, sorry, I don't even know. I wasn't even thinking about the notes. Sorry.
You're okay. You're okay. I can walk through this. Yeah, neutral. The neutral position says Genesis 1:29. God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the ground of the whole earth, every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They are to be food for you." Right. So they'll say pharmaceuticals are a morally neutral substance. God has given us seeds, plants, fruit. They're all good. These objects can be used to harm, but they can also be used to for creative and redemptive purpose. Ayahuasca is effectively as neutral as a spoon. Again, I mentioned this, getting fat or feeding the hungry. A spoon can do both. So the neutral folks would say this substance, when used in religious practices, yes, of course it's sorcery. But if it's used in a medical practice, maybe it's not. Again, being neutral on this. And we've walked through these, you know, illustrations with marijuana already. What makes ayahuasca?
Marijuana, that'll get you canceled right there.
I did. Yeah, marijuana, because half of it was Rona. you know, there's our examples here: chiropractic, yoga, astrology. We kind of pulled the magic out of these things and have found some kind of redeemable attribute to them. So to say, hey, we shouldn't be doing this in concordance with like speaking on behalf of the gods, going through these practices, but maybe the drug compound itself can be used in redemptive. I'm going to say maybe. I just haven't made up my mind on this issue. I think it's dangerous and I'm concerned about it. I definitely want to read more studies, do more research on this, figure out how uniform these experiences are. But then objectively bad, you know, we've kind of walked through what that looks like as well. You just can't make meth good. You just can't make pornography good. You can't make heroin good. It's bad. It's objectively bad. It's going to hurt people. And I think that is a reasonable Christian position to have. I don't fault anyone who has it. I'm kind of sifting through this myself. I think many Christians need to be careful. We've been very quick to label things demonic and evil in the times past that have confronted with our worldview. And we really need to be asking ourselves the question, is this biblical? What does God say about this issue? Is it moral? And not, you know, burning people at the stake who think the world is round. You know what I'm saying? So like, we need to be careful about making every issue of ethics something that is like a salvation-based issue, and really reason through this to say, you know, we want to be compassionate about people who are in pain, who need help, and then say, are there other ways that we can do this? I would really encourage. Totally. Go ahead.
Well, I've got a buddy who did. He had PTSD. His brother died. It was a drug-induced suicide, and the PTS treatment he did was a microdosing. I think it was ketamine. It might have been something different. And it helped him get in touch with his pain. And it's like he was living in a fog and he's not in there anymore. He didn't have any kind of big overt spiritual experiences. He seems to be no longer showing the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. And here I am going, I can't deny the good that did for you. And I'm glad to see you free from the post-traumatic stress. I love that friend. I hope he stays in a healthy place. However, there's also this part of me that goes, and I know it's a slippery slope fallacy, but I just look at the trend. The moment we say this is okay, it just keeps going further and further. Like I don't know how to say this. I don't want our show to get thrown off the air, but there are certain things that today are legally allowed that used to be illegal. And now where you look at where the trend is heading, it's not just that particular allowance. It's like everything under the sun should now be allowed. And there's this drive in people to say, if what I do doesn't hurt you, then why is it wrong for me to do? And I just see where that kind of logic leads us. And I think that is the fruit of individualism. And it fails to live up to a biblical worldview that shows us that we really are never our own. Everything we do affects the world around us. We are interconnected. Those of us that are a Christian, we even have an expression to talk about how interconnected we are. We call ourselves the body of Christ. When one member suffers, we all suffer. And so I'm just very afraid of, and I'm just being honest here, and you guys can take this with a grain of salt. I'm very afraid of giving permission to things that were used to contact the gods and get people demonized. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just very afraid of that,
knowing
how bad it is in many other ways, to then find one way in which it's okay to use. It's just like, oh, that just feels so scary to me. And yeah, I don't want to go on the other side of it, calling everything a devil and suddenly making everything off limits and demonizing people and calling them evil because of something that is a pretty hard issue to judge.
So we have to, my
incredible caution on this.
No, and I share the sentiment of incredible caution. I think that's the most important. I think that you also have to baptize this conversation. I've said it 3 or 4 times in this program over and over and over again. 100% prohibited for recreational purposes and for spiritual experiences. 100% prohibited. It is unacceptable, right? The only ethical question the Christian has is under the grounds of medical use. Is that a thing? That is something I think for me, I'm just saying I haven't decided yet. I lean towards, I'm neutral. Man, I don't even say neutral. Neutral leaning towards bad. I haven't made up my mind. But to say that I do think that
You won't outright condemn it, but you don't want people doing it. That's probably the better way to phrase it.
I wouldn't advise anyone to do it yet. I mean, certainly there are lots of clinical research, lots of studies. There are trying to make advancements to where they can remove the trip from this, because some of these trips can be startling and scary, and they can be pretty intense. So I think that there are a lot of things that science is working on. I think that we have to be aware of it in the same way that we don't want to get snuck up on the transgender ethics issue. We don't want to have, like, you know, 6 transgender people in our church trying to get baptized, and that's when we're trying to figure out the transgender issue. We want to know on the front end before it becomes the mainstream. The same could be said of abortion.
It is mainstream where I am.
It is, like, it is mainstream
now. I have people in my church that I've had to say, hey, I think you need to go through deliverance for having done ayahuasca and doing shrooms as normal spiritual experiences. So
yeah,
it is mainstream here in Denver, Colorado.
That's what I mean to say, is that it is and is becoming more mainstream, and we need to have a Christian ethic for it now, because it's ever present. Anyway, that's the show, guys. So thank you so much for tuning in to the program. If you want to know more
on Patreon,
about the ayahuasca, just the scientific side of psilocybin and ayahuasca, my friend Adam and I did a whole hour-long interview that will be over there on the Patreons. Make sure to subscribe to the newsletter. Link can be found in the description of the video. Subscribe, like the video, share it around. It's a head scratcher. I want to know what you think. What do you think? Drop a comment in this video. Let me know where you think you're on the neutral side. It's a good thing. It's a bad thing. Where you land on it, I'd be interested. And man, if you find resources where this would be helpful for Christians to think through, man, drop them in the comment section. I'd love to read up on different Christians having this discussion, thinking through this issue. I just kind of toss our hat in the ring. We hope to see you guys next Monday and Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. at Central Standard Time. Want to thank Kairos Classrooms for sponsoring this episode of Remnant Radio. And if you're out there, you've ever wondered, hey, I wonder if learning a biblical language would be a supplemental tool for me to help me in my biblical studies. Well, you need to check out Kairos Classrooms. They offer Greek and Hebrew classes that can help teach you and train you. It's a live classroom environment with actual students and actual live teachers, and they help teach you the biblical languages of Greek and Hebrew. And you need to check out Kairos Classrooms today. There's a link in the description, and you can use the promo code REMNANT to get 10% off. These classes are already crazy affordable, but with the promo code REMNANT, REMNANT, you'll get 10% off of Kairos Classroom. So check that out today. And thank you so much for Kairos for sponsoring this episode of Remnant Radio.